morning again. I love being here. I love being here among Unitarian Universalists, and I am proud to call myself a UU. You know what else I'm proud of? Our seven principles. Unitarian Universalist congregations affirm and promote seven principles which we hold as strong values and moral guides. They are, in case you've forgotten, UUUs, and for you new people. First principle is the inherent worth and dignity of every person. The second principle is justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Third principle, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. Fourth, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Fifth, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and society at large. Sixth, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. And finally, our seventh principle is respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. In short, every single one of us matters, and we are all in this together. I am a social worker. My education in social work has provided a framework for understanding the world beyond my actual job. Probably the biggest framework for that is systems theory. Systems theory explains human behavior as the intersection of the influence of multiple interrelated systems. Every single person is influenced by their family system, their extended family system, their workplace, their place of worship, school, local government, organizations, local organizations, and government at all levels. All these systems interact and intersect and impact each other and the people that make up that system. In other words, no man is an island. So, for instance, if a child has a behavior problem, there is often a problem in a system they're in. It could be a family with an absent parent, a school that isn't addressing bullies, a government that doesn't ensure basic health care is accessible. When an individual is living in a healthy system, they are much more likely to be healthy themselves, to thrive, make good decisions, and support others in that same system. So if you strengthen one part of the system, you strengthen the whole. Easy to say, usually hard to do. And the larger the system, the harder the change. So one way that we deal with this is to start small. The problem is big. What is one small thing we can do that makes things a little bit better? So, for instance, a problem that I come across a lot in my work is I work for a hospice, and so I go visit people and I kind of ask them what's going on and how they're doing. And went to visit a patient one day, and his wife was there, and we were talking, and she's the full-time caregiver. She takes care of him 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Her family lives out of town, don't have a strong social network. She's in it pretty much by herself. And she said, "I'm doing fine. I'm fine." But as we talked more and more, I understood that it was emotionally stressful and physically stressful, and just the fact that she had to be there every day, every moment of every day, was exhausting. And as she spoke and talked about this, you know, I could see that in her body, that she was just sort of kind of caving in. And we talked, and she talked about just like she can't sleep well at night because she's listening for him. And she doesn't even feel like she can go outside, even though she probably could, but she doesn't feel like she could go outside because she feels so connected to him. And so in a way, she feels trapped in her own home, caring for him. Well, as it turns out, they don't qualify for services that might provide caregivers that come in. And like I said, family was out of town. So I could only offer the smallest thing. And I said, how about if we set you up with a volunteer who can come once a week for an hour or two and just be there with your husband so you can feel free to go do whatever it is you want to do. And immediately she was like, oh, that would be good. Then I could do, you know, this, or I could go to my garden, or that would be good. And just knowing, she said, just knowing that she was going to have at least a little bit of time made her feel a little more relaxed and able to cope. Another social structure, a social construct that helps describe systems theory is micro and macro sociology. Macro sociology looks at large-scale social processes such as social stability and change. So this is the government level, like the federal government level of things or our whole societal level of things. That's macro. Micro-level sociology looks at small-scale interactions between individuals, even conversation. This would be your own little life and family right around you. That's micro. So in the last example, that was micro. That was this woman with her husband trying to deal with their personal relationship, right? But even that is impacted by the macro because she lives in a society that does not have a good way to offer assistance to people in her situation. Medicare does not pay for nursing care to come into your home, and hospice doesn't provide caregivers to stay with them. On hospice, they don't. Home health, you can get caregivers. Medicare will pay for caregivers. So there's not. If you don't qualify for, if your income is so low you don't qualify for certain programs, you don't have a lot of support. That's macro. It affects the micro. The bigger the system, the more we feel like we have less control, less impact on our situation. Recently, our country had a big healthcare debate. Many people were scared that they would lose their health insurance or that insurance that was now affordable, even if it was barely affordable, would become unaffordable. But those same people often felt powerless and helpless in the face of the government system. So again, we start small. Many of you know that I have been involved with Progressive Women of Hendersonville, and my main contribution there is to organize postcard parties every Friday. That started when we went to the Women's March in Washington, which was pretty macro, and when we got home on Sunday, they sent out postcards to each of us, email postcard template to each of us, and said, now write your members of Congress and tell them you went. And my printer's terrible, so I sent it to a professional printer, and I posted on Facebook, hey, anybody need any extra postcards? Meet me at Sanctuary on Friday. And by Friday, we had over 100 people who came together and wrote hundreds of postcards. Started tiny, got bigger. And it's gotten even bigger than that, because we have met every single Friday since then. So this last Friday was our 31st postcard party. We have never had fewer than 40 people come, and we have written up to date over 11,000 postcards. How big of an impact does this have? It's hard to say. It's hard to know. Gathering together for the task of writing postcards, though, has helped create a community of people who share similar concerns and values. It has been a source of support and inspiration and has helped people deal with their personal anxiety and anger or frustration. In fact, last night I had someone tell me that just knowing the postcard parties happen helps him stay engaged and keep calling and writing on his own. If you think about it with the systems theory, on a micro level, the postcards help individuals cope. gives them personal support and a sense they are doing something. And on a macro level, maybe receiving hundreds of postcards on a particular topic does have some impact over elected officials and their choices in creating and voting for or against legislation. This is how change happens. This is how we create the world we want to live in. This is why we value the worth and dignity of every single person and recognize that we are part of the interdependent web of all existence. We are all in this together. What impacts one of us has some impact on all of us and impacts not just humans, but our whole world. Think of climate change if you want the most macro example of all. Now, I have to admit, when people start talking about climate change and icebergs melting and terrible storms coming through, I get to feeling a little sick at my stomach. Anybody else feel like that? Anybody else feel utterly helpless? I mean, yes, I take my canvas bags to the grocery store, and I do drive a Prius. How many people out there drive Priuses? I mean, our parking lot is full of them, right? Go, you use. But honestly, that doesn't really feel like all that much. And we know, like, how much of an impact does that have? I don't know. In learning about some of the societal problems we have, in this last year, I feel like I've had a, in these last 9 months, I feel like I've had a crash course. I've been learning all kinds of things about all sorts of topics. But I've learned more about what I can do. And I decided to take some very personal action. In February, I stopped eating meat. There are lots of reasons why. But on a very personal level, I kept seeing videos of pigs playing with dogs, and I kept seeing articles about the inhumane treatment of dogs that are slaughtered for meat in Asia. And I thought, if pigs and dogs are about as smart as each other and both have a sense of play, then why do I feel okay killing and eating pigs, but horrified at the slaughter of dogs for meat? And once I came to that realization, I realized I felt the same about cows. And then I thought, why would I want to kill any animals at all when I don't need to? I don't even kill spiders if I can help it. Now, mosquitoes and roaches, I will say, they are still fair game. I hate them. I have always hated roaches. I probably hate roaches more than mosquitoes, and they really don't bother me as much personally, you know, but I hate roaches. Ugh. But no animals need to die for my dietary pleasure or needs. I am wealthy enough to have plenty of other options to satisfy my nutritional needs and culinary delight. And then in June, I stopped eating any dairy. It turns out the production of milk isn't really kind to animals either. And since I had already come to the conclusion that killing animals for eating wasn't very nice, I concluded that making mama cows go through a pretty invasive and heartbreaking process just so I could eat cheese wasn't very nice either. This was a very personal decision. It was hard to allow myself to understand the realities of what animals have to go through in our food industry so I can be fat and happy eating pizza. Because I do love pizza. And it does take more time and planning to make sure that I have food I like to eat and snack on, because Lord knows I am never going hungry. And I do love tasty food. But I'm going to be honest. If it was just at this very personal, micro level, I would probably decide that my own worth and pleasure was greater than an animal's. I have to admit that. I would probably start sneaking cheese here and there and then be eating sloppy cheeseburgers before long. But there's a macro level to this, too. Animal agriculture requires huge amounts of grain production, land use, and water. According to an article on PBS NewsHour by the Center of Investigative Reporting, it takes 1,800 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of grain-fed beef. We use 8 times more land to feed animals in the U.S. than we use to feed humans. The 500 million tons of manure created each year by American cows, not worldwide, 500 million tons of manure created by American cows releases nitrous oxide, a gas that has 300 times the global warming effect of carbon dioxide. And as an aside, in North Carolina, the pig industry is king, with 10 million pigs creating waste equivalent to 100 million humans, and disproportionately polluting areas where poor people and people of color are trying to live. In total, 6.5 pounds of greenhouse gases are released to produce just one quarter pounder burger. Holy cow, indeed. That is crazy, right? That's crazy. Our food system is really crazy. Do you feel overwhelmed? I do. That's okay. Whenever I start thinking about all these problems, I get this sinking feeling, and I just want to like throw up my hands and say, I can't deal with all this. You know, nice numbers, but whatever. I can't deal with it. It's too much, and I cannot fix it all. I go into a kind of denial or psychic numbing. When things start feeling overwhelming or challenging to my status quo, I really just want to turn my head from it and resist changing or acting. But now I stop myself, and I go back to thinking about the macro and the micro. I think about the whole system. Okay, so I can't fix it all, but what is one small thing I can do? What is one little step I can take? For my patients and families, it is often getting just a little bit more help in their home. Maybe it's writing one postcard. For me, it started with deciding not to eat pork or beef. Sometimes that one little step is enough. Sometimes it leads to another step. But the only way to move forward is to actually take a step in that direction. And sometimes we go backward. The events in Charlottesville felt like a huge step back. I grew up in the post-civil rights era. My schools were not segregated, and it has never been okay in my social circles to use certain derogatory phrases. So I never imagined that I would see white men with torches screaming, "Jews will not replace us," and beating a black man half to death and slamming a car into people in the street. I certainly never imagined that the most powerful leader in America would say that there were some very fine people among them. Talk about some problems in the larger system. But I still believe in that system. I believe in our democracy and in the democratic process. That's the fifth UU principle, belief in the democratic process. I believe that if every single person takes some action in their own small sphere of influence, that will ripple out across the whole web of existence. We have some great leaders who value the same things we do: truth, justice, equality. If we all, in our own little micro ways, make choices that are true to our principles, that are made in consideration of each creature's inherent worth, and understand that we are all connected in this web of life, then we will keep changing for the better. This world will be a better place. And that is why I come to this fellowship. Because we believe in truth and justice, equity and compassion. Because we challenge each other to learn, be thoughtful, to continue on a path of spiritual growth. We believe in the value of each other. And we understand that whatever we do flows out throughout other systems we are in. May we always be mindful of these values and principles. Because really, we are all in this together.